Chapter 2. The HMO Model. HMO, noun. Abbreviation for house in multiple occupation. A property shared by at least three tenants, forming more than one household, where the tenants share toilet, bathroom or kitchen facilities, as defined by www.gov.uk. A household consists of either a single person or members of the same family who live together. It includes people who are married or living together and people in same-sex relationships. Investing in HMOs is by far the best way to maximize rental income and monthly profit from buy to let. There are some exceptions, such as luxury homes and corporate lets in capital cities. But by and large, buying properties in area where rental accommodation is in high demand, see Chapter 5, and letting the rooms to individual tenants will generate 2 to 3 times the amount of rental income that you could achieve by letting it as a single unit. Yes, the associated costs are higher, and it takes more work to manage. But the rental income certainly makes the extra effort worthwhile. To give you an example, by the start of 2007, I had a decent-sized portfolio of properties, but all were let as single units. And while the portfolio as a whole was profitable, one 4-bedroom detached house was losing me money each month. It was a lovely property, so rather than simply cutting my losses and selling, I decided to create 2 extra bedrooms and turn it into a 6-bedroom HMO. The rental income jumped from £1,200 to £2,500 a month, and the liability in the portfolio suddenly became its most profitable asset. That was my light bulb moment when I realized how much more profitable my portfolio could be. Just a little word of warning. If you're now thinking of doing the same to an existing portfolio, stagger the conversions. While it was ultimately, undoubtedly, the right move to turn 20 of my properties into HMOs, what I didn't quite think through was the practicality of doing all 20 at the same time. I think I was so overcome with excitement that I'd discovered this brilliant new business model that I didn't properly think through the logistical or financial implications. Having all those properties not generating any income for nearly 2 months, on top of the cost of the necessary refurbishment, meant things were very tight, not to mention hectic, for quite a few months. I'd certainly take my time if I did it again. A lot of people still think of HMOs as student housing, but the model has come a long way in the last 10 years, and the vast majority of both already successful and new investors I meet are letting rooms to young adults in full-time employment. Some fall into the young career professionals category. Others are working in bars, restaurants and shops. Many are on short-term contracts and find it much more convenient to rent a room than a flat for a few months, as landlords usually request a 12-month rental commitment. Some tenants will rent a room in the same property for years. As the landlord of an HMO, you are typically responsible for providing and maintaining all fixtures, fittings and white goods, fully furnishing the property, including kitchen, dining equipment, but not linen, paying council tax and utility bills, excluding telephone, providing and paying for broadband, providing a regular cleaning service for the communal areas. In other words, you're providing the kind of accommodation your tenants might expect if they were living at home with their parents. In some cases, better accommodation. The tenants seem to like the ease of all-inclusive rent, and because many of them are of a similar age, it's often a good social environment for them. See Chapter 9 for more detailed information on refurbishment and getting a property ready to rent. The cons. I'm going to start with the downsides or the more challenging aspects of operating HMOs, because there's no getting away from them. And if you're going to get into this business, you need to understand exactly what lies ahead. Bad press. One of the things you'll always come up against is the preconception that multi-let houses mean cheap and nasty accommodation, run by landlords who care more about making money than the well-being of their tenants, packing as many people as they can into one house for the sake of profit. Like it or not, there's a popular feeling out there that decent landlords let properties as one unit rather than room by room, and choosing to go down the HMO route is rather unsavory. Unfortunately, yes, there are some landlords who don't comply with either property regulations or their legal and moral obligations to their tenants, don't look after their investments, and as the standard of accommodation goes down, so does the quality of tenants. And because of the media's love of a good horror story, it's these tales of slum landlords and tenants treating properties like DOS houses and running cannabis factories that people hear about. So although the kind of HMOs I'm talking about running are nothing like that, nor the old stereotype of student accommodation, and thankfully the number of good professional landlords is increasing, you need to be prepared for a less than enthusiastic reaction when you tell people what you're doing. My advice is to talk as little as possible about it until you're up and running, because it's very easy to be put off by advice from people who have very little relevant understanding or experience. Heavy management demands. Ask any investor not currently investing in HMOs why they're not, and the first thing out of their mouth will probably be, it's far too much hassle dealing with all the tenant problems. A group of unrelated people living in a house together can sometimes result in more disagreements and more, often petty, complaints, and you'll undoubtedly get far more maintenance issues than you would renting an unfurnished property to a family. You need tact, diplomacy, strength of character, a good team of tradesmen, and the willingness and ability to respond quickly to issues. Admin. With multiple tenants come multiple sets of paperwork and an increased number of phone calls, viewings, move-ins, and move-outs. Tighter legal requirements. HMOs fall under very specific licensing, planning, health and safety, building and letting regulations and laws. There has been a lot of change in policy over recent years, so you need to make sure that you not only adhere to the policies and requirements in force at the time you acquire and let your HMO, but that you stay up to date and compliant. See Chapter 3 for more details. Staff. If you want to build a significant portfolio of HMOs, there's no question you'll need to employ a team of people to help you run it. You could probably manage between 2 and 5 houses on your own, but after that it can quickly become a full-time job. And going back to why you want to invest, I bet because I want to be a property manager wasn't anywhere on your list. So you'll need to be prepared and able to hire and manage staff of your own. The good news is that while all this is time-consuming and requires organization and attention to detail, it can all be systemized and outsourced to a small team under your control. I'll stress again that you must understand this is a property business and you'll need business skills to run it. The pros. The upsides of investing via the HMO model echo the key reasons I gave in the last chapter for why I invest in property as an asset class. To reiterate, HMOs offer the most reliable, tangible, and profitable form of investment I've been able to find. Cash flow. I haven't met a single investor who's operating HMOs for any reason other than cash flow and profit. HMOs involve far more work and the running costs are higher than for single lets, but the rental income is up to 3 times as much as you would get from letting the property as a single unit. That means both your yield and profitability tend to be significantly higher than average buy-to-let figures. 2 reasons why the cash flow is so good are: A. Voids don't have the same impact as with single lets. As a general rule of thumb, in an average 6-bedroom HMO, rooms 1 to 4 cover your costs, and rooms 5 to 6 are your profit. The likelihood of having more than one room empty at a time is extremely low, so even if you lose a tenant, you're still profitable. Compared to losing a tenant in a single let, which results in you having to cover the property costs yourself every time. B. Virtually recession-proof rental income. When times are hard, people cut costs, and an all-inclusive room rental makes it easier for people to budget, and much cheaper and less hassle than renting a whole flat. I haven't suffered any drop in tenant demand since the credit crunch hit, and have consistently operated at 98% occupancy. Flexibility of investment. Because HMOs tend to be larger properties, the building usually offers the potential to be reconfigured as and when the demand for rental or sale changes. Most of the HMOs I've bought have been family houses that I've then reconfigured by way of stud walls and adding bathroom facilities, so they could easily be turned back into family homes if there was a high demand for those. Similarly, there may be the option to separate the house into separate flats or adapt it to accommodate those with disabilities or the elderly. Buying things that offer a good degree of flexibility means you give yourself the best chance of maximizing profitability into the future. Helping with the housing shortage. Most investors I know have an element of philanthropy in their overall life plan, and while I'm not for a minute claiming to be investing purely for the good of others, the simple fact is that by providing good quality accommodation and maximizing the occupancy potential of some of the existing housing stock, we're helping. The government needs more good private sector landlords offering decent, affordable housing. Key performance indicators, KPIs, for HMOs. I'll cover KPIs further in Chapter 13, but here are the headlines for now. Whether you're running a portfolio of HMOs or single-let properties, you have to be able to monitor and measure your investment against itself, other similar properties in the market, and other investment options. You need to set up a system. I do it on Excel spreadsheets, to track income and expenditure, rental and capital values, and occupancy figures. Those will allow you to assess your returns and see whether you're maximizing those returns. You need to be absolutely precise about the costs and rental income for each property. While that's something your bookkeeper should take care of for you on an ongoing basis, you must be able to calculate for yourself, with a high degree of accuracy, how profitable a property is likely to be before you buy it. There are a lot of costs associated with buying and operating an HMO, and you need a spreadsheet that breaks those down in detail so you can quickly calculate whether the monthly cash flow stacks up and how good a return you'll be getting on the capital you'll need to invest. Returns can be measured in a number of ways, but I focus on 3 in my business: profit, return on investment, ROI, and yield. Profit. Fundamentally, this is what keeps me, my lifestyle, and my portfolio going, and I presume it's your main reason for going down the HMO route. In addition to monthly bills, you'll need to plow some of the rental income back into your investment, in the shape of maintenance and updates to fixtures, furnishings, and the fabric of the property itself. But you should be building those costs into your budget so that your profit figure is or could be personal income. Remember to include tax in your costings and revisit all the items on your income and expenditure spreadsheet on at least a monthly basis. Even small reductions in utility bills, a 0.25% reduction in mortgage interest, and minor increases in rent can add up to a significant increase in profit across a portfolio of properties. ROI, annual profit divided by total capital invested equals annual return on investment. As a professional investor, ROI should be right up there with profit as a key measure. If your main investment goal is monthly income, you may be tempted to put more capital into your HMO in order to reduce your mortgage payments. But I don't think that's a smart move. I've already said that one of the main benefits of investing in property versus other assets is that you can leverage the bank's money and benefit from capital growth on not just your own money, but theirs as well. Investing as little of your own money as possible means that you'll be maximizing the return on your own capital, essentially making your money work harder for you. One of the main benefits of renting out rooms is that the rental income, and therefore profit, is maximized, so you can afford to gear highly. In time, you may be able to refinance so that there is less of your own capital left tied up in the property. If you're able to take all of the original capital out, you'll have an infinite ROI, all of the profit with no financial investment. Example: annual rental income, £30,000. Annual costs, £18,000. Annual profit, £12,000. Total capital invested, £75,000. Deposit, buying costs, refurbishment, furnishings, etc. Annual ROI, 16%. £12,000 divided by £75,000. Refinance after 5 years, withdrawing £50,000 to leave only £25,000 capital invested. Annual ROI, 48%. £12,000 divided by £25,000. You can also add capital growth figures to rental income to gain an ROI figure for a period of time, e.g. original purchase price, £200,000. Capital invested, £75,000. Value after 5 years, £250,000. Capital growth, £50,000. Rental profit, £60,000. £12,000 times 5 years. Total profit over 5 years, £110,000. Annual ROI over life of investment, 29.3%. £110,000 divided by 5 divided by £75,000. Once you have your ROI figure or figures, you can compare it or them to other investment returns and see how your HMOs are performing for you. Yield. This is talked about as a headline figure by the media and many investors, but for me, it comes behind profit and ROI and is simply an indication of how good my investment choice is for the area. There are two key reasons why I don't rate it as highly as the other two as a measure of success. A. National yield figures are usually either gross or don't even state whether they're gross or net, i.e. costs are often not factored in. And sometimes a figure stated as net actually only takes into account the mortgage repayment, none of the other associated costs. B. Yield doesn't take into account how much of your own capital has been invested, i.e. whether you're highly geared or own the property outright, your yield figure could be the same. People calculate yield in slightly different ways, But the most common calculations are rental income divided by the property's value, gross yield, and profit divided by the property's value, net yield. To use the figures from the last example, purchase price, £200,000. Rental income, £30,000. Profit, income minus costs, £12,000. £30,000 minus £18,000. Gross yield, 15%. £30,000 divided by £200,000. Net yield, 6%. £12,000 divided by £200,000. The national average yield figure quoted tends to fluctuate between 4% and 5%. This is mainly based on single lets and is usually a gross figure. As a general rule, HMOs gross between 2 and 3 times the national average yield, and your net yield percentage should still outstrip the national gross. Although a lot of the KPI data can be compiled by your property manager and bookkeeper as your business grows, you will have to be able to do it all yourself in the early days. I'd suggest that if you're not already familiar with this kind of data compiling and tracking, that you read some basic business administration books and make sure you understand how spreadsheet programs such as Excel can help you. The most important thing with analysis and tracking tools is that you understand them and they're user-friendly for you. What's perfect for one investor isn't necessarily the right format for another. Work out a system that suits you, so you can keep it up to date and won't waste time completing information that's not useful to you. Make it personal. Remember that this is your business. The key KPIs listed above are, in my opinion, the most important ones that will enable you to monitor and compare your investment. But there may be others that you'd like to add, according to your fundamental goals and objectives. KPIs don't have to simply be financial, so if spending more time with your children is something you'd like property investment to facilitate, then make that measurable and put it on your spreadsheet. Because if you're succeeding financially, but not in terms of lifestyle goals, it needs to be flagged up and put right as soon as possible. Regular KPI analysis will keep not only your business, but also you, on track. Checklist. Understanding the HMO model. Have you done all these things? Understood the difference between student HMOs and renting rooms to working adults. Appreciated the downsides and really considered whether you're able and prepared to deal with them. Considered again whether the pros will satisfy your goals and objectives. Read business administration books, guides, and researched KPIs. Become familiar with Excel or a similar spreadsheet program. Thought about the type of KPIs you'll need to track in your business.